Session number 16713, Mr. M. Waterston, reel 10.
Waterston 10. You were telling us that you retreated down the road, or most of the company did, into the arms of the Germans. What happened next? That was their company.
Well, I come out of the woods, and this lad, Noble, was in my section. He was still lying there. And he must have died of shock, because I went to him, and one of the lads shouted, "I wasn't touching him, Corporal," he says, he's dead. And he must have been, because he just rolled over when I touched him. And Tony Bainbridge, he showed me, load this boy's anti-tank rifle up. I says, "What for?" He says, "Well, can I get the magazine in?" I says, "Well, strip it down then and put it in." "I didn't know how to clout onward." I says, "Well, how does they expect me to clout onward?" I says, "Every time you've had any, I'd been on a key there, you know. I used to go up when we had our drills. I used to go up to an hour before the drill started to get instruction, you know, on the Bren gun and the bandit boys' anti-tank rifle. Yeah, I was good at it." So you keep saying, "Hurry up, man, hurry up." And they were getting up and running away back round the wall and all that. And there was blokes screaming, and me legs hanging off and this, that and the other. Boy, there were some terrible sights when I went round there.
This was your first sight of death and injury. Yeah. How did you take it?
You know, stopping my story. These young lads that was at the Gulf and all that. The gun and to be counselled and this, that, and as soon as they come back to be counselled. Where was the counselling we got? Yeah, boys, we seed all that bloodshed, both civilian and army, men blown up and everything, animals blown up, bloated up, and all this, that, and the other. Where was any of the council got, you boys, to give us our demob money and send us yarn? 17 days leave. Yeah, well, forget about it, you know. I mean, if I'd been counselled about that, would I have been able to tell this story now, 50 years after? Eh? It's there in a picture in there, Tucker. I can see it. Every blinking movement, every lad that I went with, the whole of my company there.
Were there many men who were frightened and running away?
Why, yeah, that's the first one, the man that got the blinking military medal and all that. He was the first one, Tony Bainbridge. He says, "Get off, getting out of here." And he was away.
Was this before?
I says, "There's only way if the magazine or not gone in, the boy's anti-tank rifle." I says, "Pull a blinking cartridge out and shove it up the spout." He says, "Well, what's it going to fire at?" Well, he says, "What were you going to fire at?" Just then there was a blinking truck come up. We didn't know whether it was Germans or out like that. I let fly with the blinking thing. And there was a truck with all the air company on. And there's a bloke there in English, when he was giving a lecture, I was at a lecture, he says, and D company was there, they disgraced the blinking battalion. He says, it was shameful the way they carried on. I says, "How did they know? They were there." He says, "Well, I've been." I says, "Listen." I says, "That's not the report I gave you at 9:30 at night." He says, "When did you give me a report at 9:30 at night? I says, "Because I was the blinking, hilarious blinking little NCO that come back shouting to Major McLaren." I says, "If you remember, Mr. Ian," I says, "if you remember," I says, "when we were up there fighting and you were back at the blinking near Chateau," We had no passport or anything to get back to you. I says, that's what I was shouting about. I says, I was shouting at Mr. McLaren to recognise me because he had a blinking, 2-inch blinking tandy tongue going at us. Because we went in on the top of a, we'd come back on the top of a armoured car, you know, and them little scout cars. No one eating scout cars. There were 600 on top of that. I jumped on top of that as it was gunning. You know when, where that tree, where the bush was, carry on my story. I come, when I fired that down, there was a big French anti-tank come up. He says, you shouldn't have done that. He says, that's the British. I says, I didn't care where it was. I says, it might have been full of Germans. But the lads had jumped on this truck to get away, and it was more like a civilian truck. It wasn't a bring it one of our trucks.
Did you hit it?
Oh, yeah, hit it. Shut on.
Anybody get hurt?
Anybody says, no, there's nobody hurt. They just jumped off and run up to the car by all sorts. As though could have been having a green uniform on there, I says. The first shot, I says, I got the first known. And they were all amazed at me because we'd been just a kid, you know. They never thought I wouldn't do this and wouldn't do that, but I showed them. Yeah. There's nobody going to get at me.
Well, the guns up. Sorry, go on with the story.
When I thought that, they were all run round the corner, you know, the wall. We thought it was a cemetery, you know, see? But it wasn't. Apparently, it was a fence round the field. So we all got round there, and the sight round there, take me, Sergeant Connie had half his blinking foot shot up here, where it tracer had hidden him. Harry McGrath, he had a bullet right through there.
Through his mouth?
His mouth. Yeah. Storekeeper, what they call him, he lives at Newbottle, had a good big lump of shrapnel in his neck. In your neck, there. And I pulled that out. The corporal was sitting on his backside, on one side. He'd been shot with a tracer. That's when he got shot there, run about. He got caught with a blumber tracer. And Major Clark, you know, the Cosby's, he, our adjutant, he was there. And Captain Goodenough. And I says to Goodenough, I says, what are we going to do now, sir, you know? He said, I don't know. And then somebody shouted, look at all the Germans. No, before that, I was looking round the wounded, you know, and they were all getting help, like the lads was helping them, you know. But when I see some of the lads that I knew dead, lad had been cycling with the years. Terrible. When I come along, I bumped into me cousin from Bertley. He was in B Company. And he says to me, he says, can they get permission, he says, to drive one of these trucks away? He says, get some of these wounded back out the road. I says, well, I can't drive mine. He says, well, I'll drive it. He says, I'll drive it. So I says to Mr. Goodenough, can we load these wounded up into the truck, sir? He says, yeah, get on. So we started out. We got two in, I think it was. And somebody shouts, whoa, look at all these tanks coming across. They must be ours. And there was a French tank there standing in the middle of the road where we were, you know, expecting there's somebody coming up this road where we went down in the bus. Blinking French tongue just torn round in the off. This little scout car, he went across, he went flying across the road, across that road, opposite where the bus stopped there, greet across it in the direction of Arras. They were coming from there. He went across and he got about, he must have been about 50 yards off them when he just spun the car round and he way back. He sees the black and white crosses on them ones. It is the Germans. So, Major Clark, no, but I'll be ready to tell you. These were his words. Sister, what should we do, sir? He says, I think we'll have to run for it. So, Major, it wasn't the colonel, but it was Major Clark that gave the everyone for himself. Get the word out here, back to the HQ.
Why, everybody started running always.
We left these, we left. When we got the two men in the Lincoln PU, somebody says, there's no good putting them in there. He says, there's no petrol in. He says, there was that. He says, look at the hole in the blinking tank. There's no petrol in. When his bullets had gone through the tank. Anyway. Couldn't have turned round and we'd run across to where the wood was, where the wood had been in. And I knew where I was going. I was going to jump that out there because I knew if I got out of the fence, I would get round the village back DHQ. So, this we run now there. Captain Gunroof says, who'll come into the go into the woods with it, he says, to see where that machine gun's firing. I says, firing from the corner, sir. So I've been up beside it. Where I had I'd been in the wood, seen it.
This was a German machine.
It was a German, aye. I says, oh, where we going now? And after that, I didn't know where they went. There was some blokes went running at that fence with me. And whether they got out of it, I didn't know. But I jumped the fence. I went over it, vaulted out it, with no messing, over the top of it. And as I got over it, here's a blinking little car coming down with some lads on the top. And I recognised it was that little scout car that had gone across and it had gone round. And it brought some of the lads out. They must have had a scuffle down there. And I jumped on, howled, stop, let's get on. But he wouldn't stop, he's carried on running. I chased him down in the village, probably, about 100 yards. And I says to one of the lads, I says, stick the feet out. And he stuck his feet out like that, and I grabbed his ankles, and I vaulted on the top, and I nearly pulled him off the car. Anyway, I got on, flat on, I dropped on top on him. And we went through the village, and he stopped at the bottom of the village, didn't know where to go, and I started directing him. And he couldn't understand what I was saying. And it never struck me any more that I thought, well, I'm blinking talking Geordie. So we went, I showed him the gun right down the road we'd came up, you know. And when we got down there, there's barriers across the roads. All in flames, you know, straw, cartloads of straw on fire and all that. I says, well, you boys, we've been up there. And I says, you boys, getting rid of that, and he's all that blinking, kept fighting and all that being gone on down here. Well, most of the lads that come back, they got caught in them fields. Some of the lads got, Billy Roberts and all them got caught in them fields on the road back. And I directed the bloke round the barrier, showed him where to come onto the field, and he missed it. He couldn't understand what I was saying. I was in Buck Bolton, flat of Reed. Lad called Brown, lad called Brown, and me, the other two lads. It dropped into the downs. I says, right, lads, get a hold of it. The bloke was going to get out the car leg. But he's shouting about, should he get out? And stood where he is there. They lifted him up wholesale. The little scout car lifted him wholesale, flattened it down on the road. And who's going to go away and leave us? And we all jumped on it. And it was only a straight road then down to HQ. Well, when we got down there, yeah, boys, they had lights on and all sorts. And McLaren was shouting, waving his revolver, "Halt, who goes there?" And I shouts, It's Lance Corporal Waters to the D Company, sir. 16D. That says I'm left D Company. And that's all I said. And I went up to him, saluted him. He says, where have you come from? And I told him. And I told him what had happened up there. And I told him about the... He says, well, you better get your men down into the chateau there. And one lad was bleeding badly from his wrist. He says, get that lad burned up. In the scout car, away, off. And I swear to dear, there was two Germans driving that. Because I don't know how he got from that other side of the field, right away around through Wireless, and back through the village. You know. It must have been marvellous, you know, if it was... I know that the scout car drivers were strangers to us, like.
You couldn't see the uniforms?
No. They only had a flap, you know, and we were just opening the flap. We couldn't see, now, because it was dark, eh? Anyway, we're good, Buck. I went into the chateau with his lad to get his hand dressed. And I met Father Dugan. And Father Dugan gave us Holy Communion. And I was talking to him in English. And I told him what had happened up there. Told him everything that had happened up there, as I'm telling you the tale now. I told him. And when I went to his lecture, he never said a word about that. So I said, the next time I see you, Ian, I'm going to give you the dressing down. I said, I didn't care whether you're an officer or not. Now, all of a sudden, he's a brave man and all that. I said, you're blinking twerp, I said, as far as that's concerned.
Well, did he believe that your company had panicked?
He called my company a blinking disgrace to the regiment. The day company at that lecture. You know, I was former that mad, I got up and walked out. Instead of stopping and contradicting, you know, pulling them up about it. I walked out because a lot of the lot says, what had they gone out there for? Kenny and the, you know, Kenny, everyone, his porters in the, was in the, he was at that trip with us from Chesley Street. Kenny, and Bobby Foster's son.
So Ian English had it wrong. He, you know, the company hadn't broken in that way.
Well, no, there wasn't all day. It wasn't all day company. It was all these lads that had come up, had gone round the side, and they must have they bet the Germans down there and they come up this road, and they were all piled in again, old lads, when they started strapping, eh? Lads that was coming back, and I mean there was no panic among the lads. As soon as we give them the order to bring in, well. Disperse, your boys are up and away off. But a lot of them went the wrong way. See, they didn't know where they were going and out. I mean, it was panicking.
So the major fault was lack of direction from the officers.
We had no direction. I mean, there was only the colonel, Major Analyst. He'd even chased Mr. Dees down that way. Mr. Dees went round that way and he got caught and he was my section leader. He'd laid me out, you know, with a section. Pointed where to put the men. And I never said Lieutenant Dees that from that day to this, till I heard that he'd been shot while a prisoner of war. He was, his family come to see if we knew out about him. And I didn't tell him. I couldn't talk to them. I couldn't talk to them.
He was shot. How did that come?
He was painting in front of the window. He was an artist, and that was always spending his time when he was in the prison work camp. And he was painting. And you know what I'm waving his arms about like that. The blinking. Jerry thought he was trying to escape, and he shot him in the window. Yeah. So we got back that night. And that night, said what was left of C Company, they said some of them had gone back with the prisoners, and there were half the C Company, they were still lined up at the side of the road. And all of a sudden, Captain Gunn have come through on a down on a carrier. And he was shouting for volunteers gone back with him to get the lads out. We turned round, I didn't know whether he got anybody with him, but you boys, you turned round on the carrier and went straight for your back before we could get out of the shadow. I mean, I would have gone back with him, because I thought he'd been killed. And he went back, and when he went in back, he must have getting captured then. But talking from my brother, talking from what my brother said, I said, I didn't know yet. I wanted to go to Wallace with him, because me and him was at cross purposes when we're talking. He says, how did you get from the top of the Wallace bunk round into the village with all them wounded in her? He says, well, I couldn't tell her. He says, because I can only remember he had of it. You know, when we stopped at that gate, the first gate there, you know, before we went up to Wallace, so then we stopped the bus. There was a big wall there, wasn't it? Well, he says, all I can remember was standing there, and somebody fetched Sergeant Harrison, Billy Harrison, the battalion football captain, and he was in the sergeant of the motor carrier platoon. And he had half the side of his head blown off. There. Terrible wound, he said, there. And he was wanting to do this. He says, now, keep. He says, I stood my rifle against the wall. He says, so I could look after Billy. He says, when I turned round, my rifle was gone. He says, I can't remember now after that. He says, there was an ammunition truck or something on the corner of the straight road. He says, it went up in flames. He says, it was dear late with flames. He says, and I didn't move anyway. He says, I didn't know which way to go.
Is your brother Bob?
No. And it must have been... I went up into the village, he says, and they pulled us into one of the cellars. He says, the next thing we knew, these big trucks came rattling through. When I was in the shadows, you know, they told us to move back out, up to the Disan, going back up the Disan Road to Disan. Well, when we went up there to that crossroads there, you know, where when we went up there, we turned up to the right, they gone up to Disan. And we had these brinking, we didn't know whether there were tanks or trucks or what, come flying down. So the whole lot of us just faded into the brinking ditch, you know. And they went by, there must have, oh, I don't know how many there would be, there'd be about 10 or 12. And they were gone pell-mell. Well, there were the things, what they were the trucks driven by the Indians, some foreign, they were Moroccans,
French
Moroccans. And they went up to Wallace and they brought our lads out. Eh? Now that would only be about 10:30, 11 o'clock. And they didn't even swear to me, they went up there at 1 o'clock from the when he went up, I says, how did you get up there? He says, I went up with me carrier. He says, where all the carriers were blown up. I says, oh no, he says, mine wasn't. I says, Captain Goodenough went up when it was in driving, you were blinking carrier. I says, and your carrier platoon sergeant was badly wounded. And he says, oh, I never saw the Sergeant Harrison after that. I says, no, but old Bob did. I says, and he was in a bad way. Them trucks came past us down the Disan Road. We got up and we marched up into Disan, and we got in there, and there was tons of trucks in there, and they loaded us upon the trucks, and they were back health leather, and we finished up at Vimy Ridge again. Vimy, little Vimy. Well, them houses that was there, they were only getting built, because we went in there, and out. Kit was in there off the trucks, you know. Somebody had carried a hello kit in there. And we went down, we changed our clothes. And I pulled my little puck out, you know, our little puck. We used to carry our shirt and vest and all that and stockings in for, you know, for a change. And your boys, there was a big tracer bullet in among them. God reached through the lot of them. I just pulled them out like that, all fell to bits. So I had to keep me all clear zone.
What stage you're in by now? Is this the end of the battle?
I'll tell you what, when I come back, I was by myself. I was the only one in our company. And when we come down the road to Little Vimy, the MPs was there, and they made us dismount and told us the gun, you know, told us that my company headquarters was just round the corner in the houses. So I went through there, and the Cokes was there. And I went marching in. Who, where's the lads? I says, what lads? Well, he says, the company, he says, we've got that dinner ready for them. I says, you want to keep it warm? And I says, because it'll be a long time before any of them comes back. I says, he said, how's that? Why, I says, most of them's gone. And they weren't believers, you know. I says, aye, I says, most of them's gone. And at the end of the day, when they start dribbling back, we're at 36 men in our company. Jack Harrison and Harry Rowntree just sat down in the grass and cried their eyes out. They keep putting me a load of dinner out on me on a plate for eight, and I couldn't eat it. And I walked off at the, what do they call him now? Sworn in with me. He finished up to be his left-hand quartermaster. Hudson. John Hudson. He was out to be quartermaster sergeant. I got one stripe and he got up, went straight up and he never did, he couldn't slow up arms. He didn't, you know, he went straight into stores, you know, because, I mean, no such thing as a left-hand quartermaster when we called up. So Jack says, I've got a pair of trousers for you. I says, all right, I'll get them. Well, I didn't know whether he was looking, but we went away to look for them or what, like, but I walked from there on out towards the main road, and I was stunned there. There's another plane come across. The French, they were in the opposite side of the road, in the actual wood, get big howitzers and everything, you know. And these Adams planes came across and struck them, and bombed them. And I was just cowering underneath the blinking trees in the bit wood, waiting really to see if there's anybody come back, or a young one or not, or a Bob will come back. And that was about, it was early morning, that. We waited nearly all day. And at 1:30 they started dribbling in. About 1:30 in the afternoon they started dribbling in. And they walked up the field. And one, I think it was Jack Hudson, he says, your master's looking for thou, Drew Bob, you know. And I'd come out of the, just out of the band top, and I see them all, you boys, me and my dear. And when Harry Rowntree realised how many come back that day, I tell you what, he was shocked. He was shocked. We all got change of clothing and everything and that down. We got a good meal. I did eat me meal when old Bob come back, like I was mad. And the blinking French, they blew the French out the blinking wood. So they sent us in the wood. And we went in the wood and were there till night time. And during the night, our 11th battalion must have come through us. Because we hit the trench and the feet walking through, and we're all cowering in the foliage in on all covered up. And some daft bloke had heard somebody talking, you know, coming through and recognised his voice, and he started talking to him. Anyway, there was the part of our 11th Battalion. They'd come out from Arras, you know, right away across. And they went back straight back to England from there.